This is Digital Story Podcast number 1065, August 18th, 2026. Today's theme is, Where Do You Go for Inspiration? I'm Derek Story. Inspiration is a magical thing. The flow of creative energy moves us to work a little harder, go a little farther, and not settle as quickly for an average photograph. Sometimes we find ourselves in a zone where compositions present themselves where there had seemed to be nothing before. So where do we find this inspiration? I'll share my favorite tips on today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. I think the easiest places to see the difference between inspired performances is in live music and sports. Watching a musician totally in the zone is an amazing experience. Seeing an athlete push beyond normal boundaries to achieve a victory can leave us awestruck. But inspired performances are not limited to these venues, however. For photographers, they can happen anywhere at any time. But sometimes we need a little help jump-starting the process. So if you find yourself needing a bit of a boost, here are some ideas for you. And these are my favorite ideas, and I have also contributions from our Inner Circle community. They chime in with some comments as well, and this should give you a nice, full-bodied, inspired experience as you listen to this. Let me start out with the first one, which is photography books. I found that if I pull photography books off the shelf and leave them lying around, I look at them more often, and when I do, I feel like I've opened a window to a new way of seeing the world. I'm not alone in this. Others in our community feel the same way. For example, Lawrence M. says, I have a large collection of books by famous 20th and 21st century photographers. When I'm looking for inspiration, I open a book, flip through the pages, and can always find an inspiration. Sometimes new compositions, sometimes new color combos, sometimes new subject matter, and sometimes new ways to ditch color for black and white. Tim W. adds, I just love photography books and enjoy both the photos and, of course, as well as the writing in these volumes. Looking at the coffee table in front of me right now, I see books by Dorothea Lange, Joel Meyerowitz, Robert Adams, and Cartier-Bresson. Those are just in reach right now. I picked books for the survey simply because they are the most readily accessible, but I also love museum shows. They're not as easily consumed as books, but more information is always better. So photography books are definitely one of the easier ways to have inspiration at hand because you can just leave them lying around, and I find that most effective. When they remain on the shelf, I don't look at them as much. I don't go over there. If I pull a few, let's say that I'm thinking about an upcoming shoot for a workshop or a job or a travel destination that I'm going to, I'll pull some books that are sort of related to what I'm going to be doing, and I leave them lying around. And then that way, when I sit down and I'm thinking about things or having a cup of coffee, then I can just pick up the book because it's right there and flip through it and maybe get some ideas and maybe think about what I want to achieve on my upcoming shoot. So I find that when I have photography books lying about, I use them more often. Here's another great source of inspiration, workshops and live presentations by photographers. Now for me, the energy I feel when being in the same room with other photographers or with a featured artist on stage is really quite powerful. Many times I've walked away from these experiences ready to go take pictures at that very moment. This is also a favorite source of inspiration for many in our community. For example, John D. says, I love attending photography workshops. Kind of puts me in a zone. John isn't alone. A third of our audience felt the same way about live presentations and workshops. Now, they're not as easy as photography books, right? There's something that you have to plan for, or the opportunity has to present itself. But it's something to keep an eye out for. And for instance, if you can go hear a photographer speak or go to a workshop with other photographers once or twice a year, when you mix that in with the other sources of inspiration, it can be really great. And you can come away with different things from the live experience than you might come away with from a photography book. Now, this third way is just one of my favorites, and I am such a sucker for this source of inspiration, and that is museum exhibitions. Oh, I just love them. There's just something about a great museum show. The wonderful lighting, the curation, the low murmurs of other admirers in the room, right? And I enjoy watching them interact with the artwork as well as enjoying the artwork myself. There's like a different sort of synergy in the room, you know, watching what people respond to, watching their expressions and their body language. Just the whole vibe of it is really wonderful. Every time I walk out of a museum that has featured a great photographer and I've been jazzed by the show, I am just totally re-energized. I mean, I'm just ready to go. I should plan it so that I go to a museum show before the first day of every photography workshop. I would come in there, probably everyone in the room would probably go, whoa, you're going to have to dial it back, Derek. Pace yourself. We got 4 days here, right? But anyway, here's what some other folks have said about this. Michael B. says, seeing a collection of great photographs is truly motivating and moving. I have been fortunate to see several photography exhibits, but I have seen orders of magnitude more paintings than I have photos in museums, so also want to highlight how inspirational seeing paintings has been for me. Seeing the powerful use of color in place of detail that Matisse excels at, and the masterful representation of light in a Rembrandt portrait are both inspirational and formative in how I approach photography. A fellow Inner Circle member once commented that a landscape photo I shared reminded him of paintings from the Hudson River School. I hadn't thought about it, but I always liked the romanticized landscapes from that movement, so I have taken inspiration from those paintings as well. It was an amazingly insightful and inspiring comment. Yes, I'm glad Michael brought up paintings too, because it doesn't just have to be a photography show. It can be, for instance, Matisse or Picasso or whomever you like a lot. I saw Monet in Venice exhibit not too long ago, and it's funny, as I was looking at the paintings, I was thinking about his composition, what he was doing, and sometimes wondering why he did certain things. So I was definitely looking at it with a photographer's eye, and then at the same time appreciating other things, like how he would capture reflections in the water, stuff like that. And I was going, you know, this is really neat. By him doing this, this enhances this painting for me, enhances my enjoyment of it. And I have to remember those sort of things when I'm composing a photograph as well. And the nice thing about a lot of the modern museums is that, you know, one wing will have paintings, another wing will have photographs. You don't have to have an either or situation. You can go to all of these different wings and pull all this inspiration in, and then hopefully, you know, put it in motion when you walk out of that museum. I should talk about photography online also, because there is a wealth of great imagery online, but there's also an abundance of frivolous content. We know that. I think the trick is finding websites and photographers that feature work you admire, and try to avoid the rabbit holes that sometimes pull us down and waste our time. You want good visual data in if you're going to have good visual data out, so to speak, and you don't want to dilute your senses too much, Unless you're going to become a selfie photographer or something like that, then okay, that's fine. But for the rest of us, probably a good idea to try to be a little choosy about what we spend our time with and the sort of information we consume when viewing stuff online. John P. had an interesting perspective on this. I find a lot of inspiration in podcasts with artists about the process that goes into their work, struggles, challenges, and how they are inspired to do things. In a similar way, documentaries about photographers and their work I like quite a bit. That medium allows you not only to see the photographs, but also hear commentary, often from the artist, about the work. Checking my DVR, I still have Out of Exile, about Fred Stein, Jamal Shabazz, street photographer, and Paper and Glue, about JR, are still there. I recently purchased Tish, about Tish Murtha, which was very good. On DVD, I have The Woodmans, about Francesca Woodman, and Finding Vivian Meyer. Speaking of movies, and this is me talking now, I do find them inspiring as well. You know, one interesting technique that I do at home is sometimes I'll hit the pause button on frames that I find particularly interesting. And I'm often amazed at how beautifully composed these fleeting moments of cinema are. I mean, this is just one frame in millions of frames for the movie, and yet I look at it and I would be proud to have that as a still photograph. I just think that some of the work that some of these cinematographers are doing is just amazing. Now, of course, they have entire crews, you know, at their disposal. You know, there's set design, there's lighting, there's costumes, there's all that stuff. That being said, actually seeing something that you go, wow, this is just a frame in a movie and I love it and I want to remember that for my own photography, that is really a cool experience. Regardless of where you find inspiration, the important thing is that you continue to seek it out. That flow of positive energy will infuse your own photography. Get out there and see something wonderful, then make something beautiful that just may inspire someone else. Let's take a look at some photography news. I'm going to start with a piece that's on the Phoblographer because it ties into what I'm talking about at the top of this show. And it's titled Four Photo Books That Serious Portrait Photographers Keep Going Back To. Now, I have a link to this article in the show notes where you'll be able to see example pictures and obviously get a lot more detail than what I'm going to share with you right here. But I will give you a taste of what they have to say and the books themselves. Portrait photography is one of the intense genres of the medium. It requires an understanding of light, gear, people, and a vision. For most, to capture a person goes beyond capturing their likeness. Sometimes it's about showcasing a side of them that most can't see. For those keen on learning about the multifaceted nature of this genre, here are some photo books that can help. The first one is Harlem Street Portraits by Harvey Stein, and just some beautiful black and white work here. The second one is Halloween Underground, New York Subway Portraits by Seymour Licht, and that's L-I-C-H-T. The next book is Vivian Meyer, and that is the title of the book and the photography. And the fourth one is Mark Selger Photographs. So four very cool books, very inspirational, different styles, great portrait work, and also not only just portrait work for if you're a portrait photographer, but also for those instances when you want to capture a portrait. It could be while you're out doing some street photography and you find someone interesting and you're able to connect with them and you want to do a cool shot. I mean, those are the types of situations where being familiar with portrait techniques and maybe being inspired by some of these portrait photographers would help you, even though you don't consider yourself a portrait photographer. So anyway, this link is in the show notes for photo books that serious portrait photographers keep going back to, and they are excellent suggestions. Here's a post on Petapixel, link in the show notes. Tickets for Fujifilm's New York Fuji Kina event cost $10 and are on sale now. Fujifilm has announced that tickets for its New York event will cost $10 and grant access to keynotes, workshops, photo walks, and festival programming with limited spots per sessions available. The New York City Fuji Kina event was announced earlier this year, but with limited details. Today, Fujifilm nearly fully revealed the event's plans, excluding a still-evolving speaker list. It will take place over 3 days from Friday, October 16th through Sunday, October 18th, 2026, across multiple locations in New York City's Lower East Side. Quote, photography has shaped New York for nearly 200 years, and at over 90 years in the imaging industry, Fujifilm has been a part of shaping photography nearly half that time. The vice president and general manager of electronic imaging division at Fujifilm North America Corporation says. In 2022, Fuji Kina became a part of New York's photo story too. This October, we're celebrating it all by bringing Photography Festival to the Lower East Side in spaces people already love, alongside the institutions that help make it what it is today. If you love photographs, making them or looking at them, this weekend is for you. For those looking at the event page, it might be difficult to parse where exactly Fujifilm is hosting this Fuji Kina, and that's because it's not living in one specific location. Fujifilm is positioning the event as not living in one specific place, but rather that it is poised to transform the historic Lower East Side into a living gallery space with 7 different venues containing 5 separate exhibitions. All right, so there's more on this whole thing, including the link to if you want to get tickets for this. I think this is very interesting, what they're doing. If you happen to go, if you happen to be in New York City in October and purchase a ticket and are able to go to this event, I would love to hear from you about what your experience was. I think this is fascinating. On1's rebuilt noise reduction targets wildlife and astrophotography shooters who don't want a subscription. This is an article on DP Review. I have a link in the show notes. On1 says its 2027 release rebuilds the AI from the ground up, adding subject-aware model selections and deblurring, and keeps the one-time purchase model that separates it from subscription-based rivals. Photo editing software company On1 has announced a new version of a standalone AI-powered noise reduction software, No Noise AI 2027. The company also says it's updated TacSharp AI deblurring models in No Noise AI for sharper images with less noise. One of the standout features of On1 No Noise AI 2027 is the addition of a model selector that matches a particular AI model to the subject of the photograph. On1 says that it built the models for the situations when photographers are most frequently dealing with noise. That includes astrophotography, portraits, and wildlife, though there's also a general model and one made for ISOs greater than 128,000. Additionally, it offers a film scanning specific model, which presumably will maintain some natural film grain. On1 says the models will remove noise while retaining texture and details such as feathers, fur, and starlight, resulting in a cleaner, more natural image that doesn't look smoothed over. While you can select the model manually, it will also automatically match the right option to your subject. And the 2027 release also brings an updated TacSharp AI its deblurring engine that promises to make images that were slightly soft look in focus without adding noise or artifacts. As with the noise reduction, TacSharp AI provides access to the model selector. It also provides access to automatic subject and background masking to sharpen or reduce noise in specific areas, and native support for Windows PCs that use ARM-based processors. On1 has also added expanded RAW file support for more than 30 camera models, though it didn't specify which ones. And then we have some examples here, and I'm just looking at them, and they'll be in the article that you can go over and take a peek at yourself. It's pretty interesting. It looks good. It does. Of course, you know, the real test is when you look at it at 100% on your own screen, but I will say that these samples do look good. And I'm looking at the interface also, as On1 usually does. Nice, clean interface, very attractive, good looking. All right. On1 No Noise AI 2027 is available for pre-order today for $70, $50 for On1 owners, and will be available in late September 2026. As with previous versions, it is available for Mac and Windows and can be used as a standalone app or as a plug-in for Lightroom Classic, Photoshop, Capture One, and more. The 2027 version is also included in the On1 Photo Studio subscription. On1, they're not resting on their laurels. They're looking pretty good here, and this looks like a terrific plugin. You know, we talked about Lightroom Classic last week. A lot of people use On1 plugins in conjunction with their work in Lightroom. This is one of those times that this could work out really well. So speaking of AI, this story here that's on Digital Camera World was interesting to me. And I'll be curious to see what you think too. It's never been about asking AI to replace creativity. Skylum CEO reaffirms Luminar's commitment to photographers. Kind of interesting, isn't it? I have a link for the whole article in the show notes. Let me read you a little bit here. Skylum is making it very clear that the photographer comes first. That's right. The company that helped pioneer AI-powered photo editing software when it launched Luminar Neo, now Luminar, back in 2022, is reaffirming its stance on the relationship between creativity and artificial intelligence. In a press release for the program's latest update, Skylum's CEO addressed growing concerns about tech affecting human talent and claimed that Luminar is taking a different approach, one where technology helps photographers realize their creative potential rather than overshadow it. This might seem a bit rich coming from a program packed with AI-powered tools, but it feels to me like a statement of intent, a promise, if you will, that Skylum will continue to develop its AI attributes, but not at the expense of the creative. And indeed, Luminar's current feature set is very much about enhancing existing photographs as opposed to generating an image out of nowhere. You need to look no further than the controversy surrounding Evoto AI at the beginning of the year to understand why Skylum might want to make its stance clear. When an AI headshot generator briefly appeared on Evoto's website, it received huge backlash from its user base. For a company that had marketed itself on putting professional photographers first, many felt the move overstepped the mark. Evoto apologized and explained that the release was a mistake, but the damage had already been done. I got to talk to Skylum's CEO regarding the shift in the company's tone when he was keen to point out that very little has changed. Quote, "It has never been about AI to replace creativity," he said. "It's about using AI to remove friction that stands between a person and their creative intent," end quote. My understanding of this is that Skylum's goal is to help the photographer get where they want to go as quickly and easily as possible without taking away their creative autonomy. As Ivan puts it, technology should expand photographers' capabilities without taking authorship away from them, adding that the photographer should remain the decision maker. And there's a bit more to this in the article. You can keep going with it. There's a number of paragraphs and examples here, but I think you get the idea. So Skylum's just saying, look, yes, we have AI tools, but they're to help you improve your work, not to just create stuff out of thin air. I think that's the bottom line here. And I think I agree with that. All right, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. I want to start out with listener reviews. I've noticed that we haven't had a new review for a while on the Apple Podcasts app. If you listen to our show there, I would very much appreciate you posting a brief review. It really does help potential listeners know that our show is alive and well. So even though I've got lots of great reviews, I think this podcast has something like a 4.7 rating out of 5. That's all fine. But if the reviews are all old, then that could lead people to think, oh, well, it was once a good podcast. But these days, no one seems to care about it. And I don't want to give that impression at all, because you and I both know that lots of people care about it. And we should let other people know that that is the state of this particular show. So I want to thank you ahead of time for those of you that will take a few moments out to post a review on Apple Podcasts, or actually any of the aggregates that you may be using to listen to the show. I really appreciate it. And I think potential listeners will appreciate it as well. I also want to mention that if you're ready to buy new gear, remember, I have affiliate tiles for B&H Photo and Amazon on every page of the digital story. So if you're ready to pull the trigger on some new gear, would you be so kind to stop by thedigitalstory.com first, click on the appropriate tile, then navigate to your desired camera, lens, or accessory. Remember, both of those retailers also carry all brands of computers, hard drives, memory cards, and a whole lot more. And again, thank you so much for remembering to do that. It really does help support this show. Speaking of which, I want to thank the members of our Inner Circle and Inner Circle Bold for supporting this show in so many ways. Of course, they contribute financially, which helps pay the bills, but it goes way beyond that. Their participation, their comments, their activity on the online sites, they're showing up for workshops. That's what keeps this community alive and vibrant. That's what keeps Rob and I inspired to keep working on new workshops, new content, new things for this community, because we know we have this wonderful group, this large group of photographers who care about what goes on here and who will participate if we present things that they're interested in. So a big thanks to our Inner Circle members. If you wish to join, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on every page of the digital story. You can nose around a bit, sign up, and then you'll be hearing from me, and I'll get you started with all the benefits of Inner Circle membership. A big thanks to all of you. I truly appreciate it. And finally, I want to give a nod to our good friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the digital story. We have an inkjet printing workshop coming up in November, and Red River is going to help us with that workshop, as they always do. How often do you get to hang out with people who really know printing? I mean, who really know printing? Well, that's going to be the case with our workshop in November. I know a little bit about it, of course, but I also have the help of my good friends at Red River Paper. And that's just who they are. They're not just people who make paper, ship it out, and then forget about it. They are committed to all aspects of inkjet printing. They want to move this whole community forward. They honestly believe that a rising tide lifts all boats when it comes to printing. And that's why I'm so honored to be working with Red River Paper. If you want to learn more about them, if you want to buy some paper, all you have to do is click on their tile, the Red River Paper tile. That's on all the pages of the digital story. Nose around a bit, buy some paper, and make some artwork of your own. A big thanks to them for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show, working on more great stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, get inspired, take some pictures. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.